We're having an interesting phenomenon happen here. This is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio. Hopefully we're hooked back up right before the show. I listened to several audios. Internet was all working fine. Everything just working great. And all of a sudden, everything just goes down. Skype shuts down right before the show, like not even a minute, 30 seconds before the show. So that's not uncommon for this work that we're in. We've had a lot of issues like that, technical issues and things like that. And, you know, hopefully we can hang up the cell phones and get back on Skype and we're ready to go. So anyway, I've got a great guest tonight. I've got Rory Hayes on the show, or Hawes. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly. Without any further ado, he's working with the sovereignty movement, and we've been involved in that quite a bit recently, not because we wanted to, but because we were actually pushed into it. And he seems to be an expert in this field, along with many others. And he's been involved in, you know, bringing this information to the forefront. So with any further ado, Rory, are you with us?
Yes, James, I'm here. And it is Hawes.
Hawes. Okay, I thought it was Hawes. I wasn't sure. Well, I'm flying blind here because everything crashed. My whole computer went down. Skype went down. Our whole internet crashed here at 8 o'clock.
You know, so, of course.
Yeah. So it's been an ongoing thing. It's amazing because we'll have, I was on one radio show in L.A., and they had six lines. They said, congratulations, you broke the record. We took down all six of our lines. So it's interesting. I guess UFOs and the sovereignty movement, anything else like that, they don't want people to know about.
No, they don't. They really don't.
Yeah, I guess they get a little upset when you take their slaves away.
That's true.
But anyway, before we get into it, I'm really curious, what got you into this movement?
Honestly, the thing that really got me going on it is I'm an electrician by trade, and so I was always fascinated by the things I heard about Nikola Tesla and what he'd done. And so I got laid off from work, and I've always kind of been sovereign. If you were to ask my mom, she would confirm this for you, that Rory has always acted like a sovereign. Mm-hmm. And but the big thing was looking into free energy, and from there I just started finding a plethora of things that absolutely fascinated me, and I looked into them, and one thing led to another, and that's when I started sticking my nose in the law books and started finding out what was going on there.
Yeah, that's free energy is a whole other subject. I actually worked with a guy, a German physicist, and he had a device with 9 coils in it, and each coil put out 25,000 watts, and it was ice cold when mm-hmm. you touched it, and you could hold this in your hand.
Yeah.
And so I know what happens when you try to get this kind of technology out. We were threatened, I don't know how many times, he had his lab blown up, and there are a lot of rules and regulations stopping, you know, anything free from coming out. It seems.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons the sovereignty thing is so important, because once you learn how it is to operate as a sovereign and to do so where the people who want to keep these things away have to consider it because you're being lawful, you see the importance there.
Mm-hmm. Now I noticed I listened to one of your interviews, and we share a lot in common because I also have a daughter, and I had some serious issues with the judges on that one, and amazing, you know, how when you're telling your story, I go, boy, that's my story, because, you know, I don't want to badmouth the mother, but, you know, there was a lot of multiple partners and drugs and everything else involved, and between the daughter coming here to a beautiful, you know, spiritual sanctuary and staying with the mother, they totally sided with the mother in Washington State.
Yeah, that was very much the same case for me, where, you know, she was just in all sorts of trouble, and you know, it was better for him to be with mom. You know, she's on welfare. She's at home all day, right? So she can take care of him. Anyway, yeah, that's long in my past. That's actually the first case that I ever won in court, representing myself, was the third time showing up to get custody of my son.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Yeah, I guess he's back with you now, which is great. And, you know, I always knew, too, that, you know, my daughter came back here and was living with me most of the time and ended up in college now, and she's just turned out great. And what I feel great about is that I knew she chose this path before she came in, and you know, there are no victims, and I, when I found out later why she chose it, it all made sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to understand when you're in the middle of it and you're a parent, you know, to realize that there are other things going on that we don't know about on higher levels. But getting back to this sovereignty movement, maybe you can explain a little bit about what it is and what you're doing and how you're helping others.
Okay, yeah. So pretty much what I do is, what I've done is mostly for myself. I share it with other people. And the first thing people really need to understand is that this is about you. This is not something someone can do for you. You know, they're not going to, no one's going to hold your hand through this. If you don't take the time to get the law dictionaries and really know it in your heart, what it is to be sovereign, you won't get this. And I have countless people who phone me and try to, you know, ask me to help them and, you know, give them a little bit of information because they have court in 2 weeks or something. And really, it's something that you can't just pick up if you're not, you know, if you're not willing to spend the time on it. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you really have to understand as a sovereign is the definition. Because if you don't know what the definition is, then you're not going to really get it. So I like using Black's Law Dictionary First Edition for it. And the definition is very simple. It's a chief ruler with supreme power, or a king or other ruler with limited power. And you are the chief ruler of yourself with supreme power. And everyone else in the world is a king or other ruler with limited power. So, you know, there is no authority above you besides, you know, maybe your creator, if that's how you wish to view it. So that's where it all starts. And you have to really know this and understand this. And most people are so used to asking for permission in their lives to do things that it's very difficult for them to grasp this point. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, I was always just, like I said, you asked my mom, I was the kid who just did what he wanted and caused me no end of trouble. And it also got me all sorts of wonderful things throughout my life. So,
yeah, we are kind of trained in that direction.
Yeah, now definitely.
Now I know that I've heard a lot of different things about there, and you know, one, if you take the more spiritual approach or whatever, they say the created can't be greater than the created, and if we're created in the same image and likeness of God or spirit, whatever you want to call it, try to use God in this case, that premise puts them, you know, put you back in the driver's seat, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. Like, when you look at, like, the fictions created by man, like, say, government or, government's probably the best example. You could say banks or anything like that. Ultimately, those are just fictions created by man, right? And
yeah.
Man, like you said, is synonymous with creation. And these things made up by man don't have any more power than man himself, right?
Mm-hmm. But they seem to think they do. You know,
what it ultimately comes down to is consent, right? Because there's only two basic laws in the world, and the first one everyone's familiar with, which is you will not cause harm, and the other one is that anything you make contract with is law. So if you make a contract with a bank and you sign it, then, you know, you made an agreement. You've created a law for yourself. Same goes with government. If you sign contracts, it's law. Now, one thing you have to always consider, because a lot of people, you know, find they've been cheated, is that a contract made in fraud is no longer a contract. Mm-hmm. And so if there's implications to some contract that you were not made aware of ahead of time, then that's not law.
So basically, if there wasn't full disclosure or not knowing who all the parties were in the contract, and there's so many different avenues you could go on that.
Yeah, definitely. Like you know, the government seems to think that there's some way that they've gotten us into the position as servants, when in fact their title is servant. And so one of the points I make is show me proof. Show me proof that I am your servant, because as far as I know, you know, I have all the proof on my side. You're the servant. You're the public servant. It's one of your titles, so... You know, yeah. I don't see how these peace officers have power over me if I didn't cause harm. And in fact, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Now, in state, you know, every state, let's say the state of Washington, they're a corporation, and and the judge actually works for the state. He's employed by the state, and that's where he derives his paycheck, I would imagine. And so do all the other agencies of the state. And so they would all seem to be in a role of trustee or public servant or employee.
Yes, yes. The other thing is I like to consider it as they're in collusion together. Because if they're trying to get you to pay something, they're all working for the same person, and they're in collusion, right? Which is one of the wonderful things about being a sovereign, when you realize what a sovereign is. Basically, a sovereign, their court follows them around everywhere. It's pretty much what you can think of court as, is anything that happens around you, to you, any interaction you have with another human or another man, right, is court. Because you're always discussing things, you're always, you know, coming to agreements with whatever you're doing, whether, you know, it's... You're talking about what color something is, or, you know, how much it's going to cost to pay for something. You know, you're always in court. And the definitions in the dictionaries, you know, all reflect that. If you go to Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary, it'll tell you that it's... you know, a sovereign or similar dignitary with his counselors, a sovereign and advisors with the governing, who are the governing power, family and retinue of the sovereign. You'll see that sovereign is again and again referenced throughout the definition to let you know what court really is.
Mm-hmm. And so basically when you go to court, it's actually your court. Is that correct? Or
No, because see, that's the thing, is you're stepping into their court. And this is the mistake everyone's making, is they don't realize that they have to keep the jurisdiction of their own court. They need to set it up right at the beginning with anyone that they're dealing with, whether or not that person knows it or not. If you're going to have any sort of disagreement with someone, like, say, a peace officer, you need to make sure it's set up right at the beginning as your court, so that as you go through the process, you can prove that you've kept your court the whole time and you have original jurisdiction. Because, yeah, when you step into that room and you don't know what you're doing is stepping into that man's court, the one who's sitting up on the bench, and you give him all the power. You're basically asking him to babysit you because you don't know what you're doing. Uh-huh. It's kind of a harsh way of putting it, but that's what it is.
So setting it up as your court would be through affidavits or a series of affidavits, or how would one do that?
I use a very simple way, a polite way. Like, say with a peace officer, I would say, how is my peace officer today in the court of record? Because a court of record is a court that is run to the course through the according to the course of the common law. Mm-hmm. And so... I would do that with any sort of interaction, and then I would have a notice. Affidavits are something that are for more formal procedures. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to start off with a notice that lays out my position, because I know my position isn't a normal one. You know, most people on the street aren't going to be doing this, so peace officers are going to be caught off guard with it. Mm-hmm. So I've set up a notice explaining everything to them.
And so as a peace officer versus, you know, just a sheriff or a police officer or whatever else, if you establish them as a peace officer and you haven't disturbed the peace or created any harm, does that right away kind of de-arm their side of the program?
Sorry, say that again?
Well, let's say if you establish them as a peace officer and you've created no harm and you're not disturbing the peace in any way, then right away you wouldn't be under their jurisdiction. I mean, right away you're saying, why am I here?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've started, like, one of the things I'm doing, you may have noticed if you've been looking into my stuff, is I've started traveling with my own license plates, my own homemade ones. I've gotten rid of my driver's license. And I've talked to the police in the neighborhood, letting them know what I'm doing. And I haven't been pulled over yet. They've been behind me a couple of times. So I don't know if I got through to them or if they're just too busy and ignoring me. But you need to really set up ahead of time what's going on. And you have to be very knowledgeable and be able to, you know, address things in the correct manner. Because, you know, when I do eventually get pulled over, because I know I will, I know I'm going to be, he's going to try and set up jurisdiction. You know, he'll do things like ask for license and registration, which will prove to him that I'm under his authority, right? You know, if I need a license from someone, then I'm sure not a sovereign, because I need someone else to tell me I'm able to drive.
Mm-hmm. So what would your reply be if they asked you for your driver's license and registration?
Driver's license and registration? Oh, I don't have those.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I don't have any requirement to have those, so I don't have those.
Yeah. So basically, you know,
and again, like I said, I would set up my court of record right away, and the very first thing, honestly, that I would do with a peace officer is I would ask him what the emergency is. Because he would have pulled me over with emergency lights. So I'll ask him what the emergency is. And if he says there's no emergency, then I would ask him why he's using his emergency lights when there's no emergency. So I would actually be first setting up a case against him to show that he had caused harm and interfered with my right to movement, my God-given right to be able to move about. And So I would try to establish that right away. If he would ignore me and kept asking again and again for license and registration, that's when I pull out the notice and I'll sign it right there in front of him, Rory Daniel of our House of Hawes. And I'll say, you should go read this right now before we go any further. And then if he wants to come back and proceed to, try and, you know, coerce me into a contract, or if he breaks the law in any way, then I'll have it filmed, because I keep my phone with me and I have an app called Ustream that streams live up to the internet where no police officer can touch it, and I'll start convicting him of crimes as he commits them.
Mm-hmm. And that way you'll have it all on record, you know, everything there.
Yeah, I'll have my record set up. I'll have conducted my court. I'll have explained to him everything that's going on. You know, I'll be asking him his name and stuff, and, you know, all the things that they try and do to you. Because that's what they're doing, is they're just setting up their court, whether or not they know it through their training or if they're ignorant of what they're doing, I'm not sure. But that's what they're doing there. You know, they want your name, they want your address, they need everything for court, right? So,
oh, yeah.
I do all the same things with them, and if they're going to threaten me, then he's going to be guilty of threatening me. I can't think of the charge offhand. If he assaults me, then he's guilty of assault, and I'll let him know. There's fines involved with all of this. I am the tribunal. That's one of the things in a court of record you need to know, is that a magistrate is independent of the tribunal. So the magistrate would be the judge, or anyone basically clothed as a civic officer who has the power to issue fines and some other things. So I would set myself up as tribunal, and I would act accordingly. And, you know, if the peace officer wants to break the law, he'll be convicted of the crime, and I'll have videotaped evidence of it. And, you know, like I said, I've explained this to a peace officer, and I told him to go and take it to a magistrate and ask him what he thought. And so far, nobody's bugged me. I've been driving around with my own plates for about 4.5 months now.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Now, I know you, I guess if you have a driver's license and have your cars registered with the state, then you're under contract with them. Would that bleed into any other contracts, or would they say you're automatically under contract with us? Let's say if there's another matter, let's say a building infraction or something of that nature.
Here's the deal is they'll often try anything. I don't think that using the driver's license to prove that you're subject to them is something they'll do. Because if they did that, they'd be kind of exposing their game. Yeah. So to be in court and to have everyone in the peanut gallery and have that go on is not something they want. But if you're in a car, that's where they're going to use that against you, right? That's where they're going to establish their jurisdiction. Well, you have this license that says that, you know, you have permission to, you know, drive this vehicle as a form of commerce, and that's regulated by us. You know, you got your license through us. So you have to kind of look at it as being an employee, right? You know, when you work for a company and your job is driving for that company, they put you through a licensing test. You know, they want to make sure that you know how to drive properly and safely before they let you get behind one of their vehicles, right? And that's the same thing the government does to you, right? They're a corporation, and they license you to make sure that you're going to drive according to the way they like. And if you don't, there's punishment for it.
Now, as far as, I guess they can't really force you to have a license or to register your vehicle, because that would, I mean, there's rules and regulations around that as well.
Yeah, that's actually breaking the law, right? By forcing anybody to do anything is tyranny. It's nothing less.
Yeah, I've experienced quite a bit of that recently.
Yeah. Governments are quite fond of tyranny. It's worked for them for thousands of years.
Yeah. You know, it seems like this whole tyranny program is, you know, starting to blow up in their face. You know, we look at the Occupy Wall Street, and now with 80 countries involved in this, this whole program starting to be exposed for what it is. And
that's a fascinating time to be alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm wondering how this applies to like civil law or, you know, this may trickle down. What I was just recently told is that the Supreme Court, 9-0 reinstated the sovereign rights of the individual and also, states as well. So I don't know if you know much about that or if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I think ultimately what this is coming down to is all these people who have power have relied on the fact that there is sovereignty. And this has been their ticket to all their wealth. And what's happened now is we're figuring it out and we're challenging them with it, and they can't go against it, because it's the only way they've been able to do what they've done lawfully. So, you know, of course there's ways that they've done things that are unlawful, but for the most part, the very smart people at the top who have all the money have tried their very best to stay lawful, so that when, you know, things did finally blow up, they would be able to point to the law and say, well, I didn't actually do anything wrong. You just consented to it.
Yeah, they think. I heard that Clinton got out of his whole program just by the definition of the word is.
Yeah, that's an amazing word. I actually heard that too. Yeah, you know, there for every word there is an infinite amount of definitions, because all words are ultimately defined by the individual, the sovereign who speaks them. So,
Yeah, it's quite interesting. There's so many ways around, you know, what's going on, you know, in your favor and not in your favor. It's almost like you need to have the dictionaries and the Black's Law books and everything else right there and define all of these words as you go along, you know, to stick to the case.
You can, like, when you have a court case, you know, you can define anything as anything you wish, and it's not necessary to have a dictionary. I prefer to use them because I know that judges or magistrates are familiar with the law dictionaries, so using definitions from them, I find, would put them more at ease. But you can define anything as anything you want. Like I said this before with Ben Lowry, you know, you can point to the tree outside and say it's a spoon. Mm-hmm. And in your court, that's a spoon, and nobody can tell you otherwise, right? You know, but to everyone else, it's going to be a tree. So one of the things you kind of want to do with your definitions is make sure that you keep them believable.
Yeah. There's so many, now there's different types of law. There's ecclesiastic law or whatever, and then there's corporate law, and then there's so many different ways of dealing with different situations. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, all those are creations by men in order to make things complicated so that other men don't know what's going on. That's what all of those are, basically.
Yeah, maritime,
maritime admiralty law, you know, almost all of them, like even the ecclesiastic law, like all created by man. There's only two laws. That's all you need to know, and they're covered under the common law, and that is that I will not cause any harm, and anything I make contract is law. So, when I strike hands with a man and say it's a deal, or I put my signature on something and say it's a deal, it's a deal. So, unless there's fraud involved in it, you're kind of stuck with that. And a lot of people don't seem to like this in the freedom movement, because there's a lot of people who have gotten themselves into mortgages and things, and, you know, they feel trapped. And all I ever tell those people is start looking into the contract and see where the fraud is. Mm-hmm. Find that, because other than that, you know, you signed the deal, you know, you looked at it, and maybe you felt forced, but you weren't, because I've gone my whole life and I'm not in debt. I might not have a home, you know, that's mine. And everything I have has not been bought through credit or debt. I've worked for it and gotten, so maybe I don't have as much, but I don't have this hanging over my head.
I've always felt the same way. Everything I have, even, you know, the ranch, everything, the cars I have, everything is all been paid for. And if I can't pay for it, I can't afford it, basically. If I can't, you know, I'm not going to get in debt because, you know, who knows what the future holds. But, you know, some people I know, you know, they have gotten into debt big time, and there's no way out of it. And you know, they were depending on the economy to continue, that they're continuing, you know, their jobs to continue and all these other things. And all of a sudden they lose their job. And next thing you know, they lose their house. And then they lose their car and they lose their vehicle, everything. Is there any recourse for these people?
There are a lot of things coming out. That's not really what I do much of. Like I said, I've always lived I've never had a credit card. That's just one of the things. I've always viewed debt as a form of slavery. So it's something I've never gotten myself involved in. So I haven't had to really seek remedy for it. There are a lot of people out there doing work in that, because there does seem to be a lot of fraud in what banks have been doing. Creditors in Commerce have been having some great success with that, if people want to look into it. Again, it's not something I thoroughly research. What I teach is sovereignty and how to handle yourself when dealing with these people who presume to have authority over you when in fact they don't.
Mm-hmm. So just for a quick scenario or a short scenario, you know, when let's say if you're going to court, you know, over some charges or whatever, what would be the first thing that someone would do?
The first thing, like, say that you got a ticket, say, you know, with what I'm doing, I got a ticket and they towed my car.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would do is take all the videotape of myself interacting with the peace officer and explaining everything to him. And I would be filing that in the case with a counterclaim against the peace officer, where I would be filing a lawsuit against him for theft of my car, for creating a contract in fraud because I wouldn't have signed the tickets. You know, if he assaulted me, then assault. So I would file a counterclaim against him, because one of the main things you need to know as a sovereign is that, you know, you're the one taking the action. It's not, you're not on the defense. You're not going, oh no, don't hit me with the sword. You're sticking him with the sword, basically, to use a violent term, which I don't really like because I'm a nonviolent man, but.
Yeah, I try to take the nonviolent path, but sometimes, you know, you never know. I guess no matter what you do, if you try a violent path, you're greatly outgunned, and they can always bring more guns and more ammo to the party than you can. So
ultimately, that's what they want. You know, their interactions are designed to make you react in an irrational way, and that's something I just won't do. You know, if he's gonna steal my car, if he's gonna attack me, then he'll be the one committing the crime and I'll have it all on video. So,
yeah,
you know, it's up to him. I put them in the position. I give them full notice. I explain everything. I show how the Canadian Constitution itself explains that I'm not subject to it. And, you know, I lay it all out for them. So they have a chance to read it all. They have the choice to come back after reading that, and they can either go according to the course of the law, or they can break it. And if they break it, then I have remedy for it.
Mm-hmm. And plan B, you know, sue the hell out of them.
Yeah, which is actually not a very common concept up here in Canada. We've our system's kind of been set up to very much babysit us, you know, with everything. And so we have insurance for most things, and most people don't consider a lawsuit as something you would go about doing.
Yeah, would you be, we've got a couple of callers calling in. Would you be interested in fielding a couple calls?
Oh yeah, no problem. I have no problem talking to people. I always enjoy it.
So we've got, I think we've got Nana from Detroit on line one with some information she wants to share with us.
Hi.
Hello, Nana. Welcome to the show.
It's Nana, like Mama. It's Nana. Hi. Hi, I wanted to share with you, because I heard you talking about the mortgage contract. I've been sovereign for almost 10 years. I'm in Detroit, and there's a lot of sovereign people here because we found out all this information like 9, 10 years ago. It swept through Detroit. Mm-hmm. At any rate, what I wanted to share with you is there is affidavits of that you can, and the provost marshal, he can come to you and protect you from other outside police entities, and it's his job to protect you. But what I wanted to share is that once you have a contract with the person that you bought your mortgage from, what happens after that is once they sell it, because they keep selling it over and over, then it becomes a third-party contract, and you made no agreement with a third-party contract, so they have no right to take the house from you because you didn't sign it.
Yeah, that's actually, see, I never thought of that, because I know that actually to be true, because they've started doing something up here in Canada where our medical, it used to be free all the time, and then they started sending me a bill. Because I had a time I had to take an ambulance, they sent me a $50 bill. And then they sold that to a third party. That third party called me up and said, you know, we're collecting this money, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you're not the government, so how are you collecting this? I don't have any contract
so
with you.
So you can do that.
And I actually said to her, you know, thank you very much for buying my debt. I appreciate it. Now I don't know the government anymore. Take care. Bye.
Because actually money is a bill. A dollar bill is a bill. So it's just bills going back and forth. but that's part of the psych-out game. But what I really wanted to share with you is, on top of that, you know, James, you've become a sovereign. There's paperwork down at the state, and the number on the top of your birth certificate in the black print is the contract number that was given to you at birth. And in that contract, at that day you were born, the federal government was given $1 million on your behalf, and the state you were born in is giving $400 for every baby born, and every birth certificate is a contract. And you can go and take that contract to the state and claim your sovereignty and say that you don't want to be a contracted number because, you know, information came out about them using Obama's, or he got how many, because they use that contract over and over. And if they think you're going to make a lot of money off your Social Security number, then they're going to take your Social Security number and reuse it over and over again, and they're making millions of dollars off of your birth certificate contract, and you don't even know it. And so you can come up with all these different contracts that have been done in your name by the government, because if they think in your lifelong Social Security contract you're going to make $1 million, then they collect it when you're born because you're going to earn it for them.
I just wanted to finish that because I just wanted to put that info out there.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, I've heard the birth certificate thing before, and I've looked into it quite thoroughly, and I personally can find no evidence that there's any money made off of it. I've followed all the different ways through Mary and through Franco Collins and stuff like that, and I can't seem to prove this.
I have what's called the 500-page Sovereign Bible that you can get, and it has all the laws, the contracts, everything that goes back to the beginning and end, and it's 500 pages long.
Yeah.
And it's accessible, but just, like I said, this is like 10 years, so you can get it, but it is true. But that's in the United States. I don't know what they do in Canada.
And one of the things that I see is that if a contract was made when I was still an infant, that contract was made in fraud. So if this is in fact
well,
true,
it is.
I have never been able to
and
prove
and then that's when you claim back your sovereignty rights. Oh, you can prove it because you can take it down to the state, and they'll give you the paperwork to take your sovereignty back. It's a document, and you pay, as I believe, I paid $150, and I got the papers from the state, and you can file them, and you become a free sovereign. And the papers are filed down at the count at the state office in, you know, wherever you're. Whatever your state. Here is Lansing. I had to go down to Lansing and claim my sovereignty, and it's a process. It's paperwork. And they got the papers down there because Mormons are sovereign. All these people are sovereign, and they're not paying any taxes because they already know the trick.
See, that's interesting, because for me, I'm sovereign because I was born that way, and there has never been a contract made with my full knowledge that I was, not a sovereign. So
well,
if anyone
made,
tries to imply that there's a contract that
it was made when you were born,
then it's done in fraud.
It is
all this.
Yes, it is all fraud. It's true.
So I actually don't have to pay any money to prove this, and I would never pay anyone any money to try and prove.
Well,
you know, this is my point of view.
It's
just
the process, the paperwork
to
free yourself from them. And they, you know, but it's all
but again,
legal.
I don't need to do that because I'm already sovereign, right?
But you're not here in the United States fighting the battles with these governments, and this is what they, the ones we're under. I can't speak for you in Canada, but this is the way you get sovereign in the United States. And I'll be mailing, you know, James some info so that you can, you know, further investigate. Okay, James?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to get that. And the, you know, I know in Detroit, because of just all the damage done there economically and on every level, I know that presses people to start saying, hey, wait, you know, what's wrong with this picture? And so, you know, kudos to all you over there in Detroit.
Right,
for,
but there's a lot of men getting out of jail because they're sovereign. They have to let them go. And if you were born Native American, you're sovereign, but they don't, you know, a lot of this, there's a lot of issues. If you, you know, like I say, it's religious. There's a lot of ways you can claim your sovereignty, and they can't do anything with you, and you get all this information. and it's legal and you are separated, and it, trust me, your birth certificate is a contract. But I will be sending you some information, James, and
right.
And thank you for bringing this forward, you know, because they shut us all down. They started changing the laws because several hundred people became sovereign in 2 years back in the early 2000s, and they shut us down because it was a lot of, it was mostly black people. So there were people with driver's plates driving around Detroit, and they were locking them up and taking them down like you have, but it was 10 years ago here in Detroit.
Yeah, and this is, again, like I said, you know, they'll start changing their laws and they'll start saying you can't be
right.
sovereign anymore
right.
and, you know, paperwork. And this is why I try and teach what I teach, which is that, in fact, you're sovereign if you say you're sovereign, and someone needs to provide proof of contract that you're not sovereign.
They would have to come to me.
I would never imagine my government, anyone from the government, showing up with my birth registration saying that this enslaved me, because that would give up the whole entire gig.
Well, that's why they shut us down.
Because
we figured it out. And it's all across. It's not just here. It's in Atlanta. It was in Washington. It was in Chicago. And it was Detroit. And thousands of people became sovereign because this book came out. It's a 500-page book on the laws and what they've done. And so, like mm-hmm. I say, this is coming forth, and the only reason I called you is because you brought it up. And like I said, and I wanted to share the third contract party with the mortgages. Once they sell it, you are no longer liable because it was a first-party contract, not no third, fourth, fifth-party contract.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had no idea that they were doing that because, again, it's not something I've looked into,
but that's
valuable information right there.
That's how Fannie and Freddie, that's how everybody went down. That was because of that, because they kept selling it until they made millions of dollars off your little piece of land, and then they want you to, you know, yeah, that's what happened.
What's
so,
the 500-page book? How would one get a hold of that?
I'll get in touch with you later, or you know, get the number and we
okay.
can talk. Because, you know, I would love for you to have it, but to ship you a 500-page book is going to cost some money. So I'll leave my number so you can call me back, okay?
Great. All right. Sounds great.
Oh, for everything you do, you're amazing and you're on track, and yay. Okay. Thank
right.
you. Thank
Thanks
you.
For
Bye.
Calling. Right.
Bye now.
We've got, are you familiar with Spencer? I don't know if he's doing a lot of work in that realm. I think he's hanging on. We'll see if we can bring him on the line, but he does a lot of work in the contract, crediting area, and it'd be neat for him to call in, or I know he listens to the show a lot. We'll see if he could call in, but I know he's got a lot of questions for you, and there's a, you know, there's so many people out there that are going through this process right now, because what we're seeing right now is just pure tyranny with
mm-hmm.
with our government, and they are getting heavy, you know, I think they're scared, and they know they're losing their grip and losing their power, and people are waking up and saying, I'm not a slave, and I think that energy that is coming from a much higher level, that we are in a revolution, and I think that revolution is being sponsored, you know, on high by these higher realms, whatever you want to call it, where people are evolving to a state of sovereignty, and they're just saying, we're not here to be slaves anymore. That's not our gig.
Definitely, I fully agree. This kind of leads into something. I'm glad we had this last caller here, James, because one of the things that I address in my videos is I have actually looked into this birth certificate thing quite thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have a very different idea of what I think the birth certificate is compared to most of the people in the sovereignty movement, because most of the people in the sovereignty movement see it as a document enslaving them. And I don't see it as that, because I've never been able to prove that it's traded anywhere, as all these people claim, and that the government gets money for it, as all these people claim. I cannot prove any of these things. I can't find evidence of it anywhere, and I very much like to work on evidence. So what I see the birth certificate is what's called a evidence of a SESTK trust, that you end up as the beneficiary of the mm-hmm. lands and resources of that your government holds as trustee and administers on your behalf. And what happens is when you get older, you sign yourself up for a social security number or a social insurance number here in Canada. And that is, in fact, how they're enslaving you. Because when you apply up here in Canada to Human Resources Canada, like you would any business. And when you apply, I feel you're applying for a job within the government of Canada. And when you do that, you are then subject to all the rules and regulations of that company or government. So this is what I'm in the process of trying to prove, because I've run down all these rabbit holes where people claim these things, and I do all these, you know, there's YouTube videos that explain you how do you find your bond and, you know, and all these things, and I've followed all of them, and, you know, people are like, well, my birth certificate's in all capital names, that means they made a corporation out of me. My birth certificate's not in all capital letters. Mine has proper grammar, you know. There's lots of inconsistencies in all these things, and I've never personally been able to prove them. And, yeah. You know, I tried to say this to your other caller was, you know, if they ever come to me claiming that this is a document of enslavement, then I'll laugh at them and I'll say, well, it was made in fraud, because how could I knowingly sign that when I was just born? And I don't think that they would use that. I think they're actually smarter than that and would use something like the social insurance number. You know, in order to get you to physically sign a contract, getting you into their system, as opposed to that. And I think a lot of evidence points to this, because when you're young, you'll notice that anytime the government has anything to do with you, or if you're in court when you're young, they refer to you as Master Hawes. They don't refer to you as Mr. Hawes. They don't do that until you get older and become of age.
Yeah. Now, the S, you call it the SDK truck. Is it like the letter S and then DK?
No. Let me spell that out for you, because it's spelled differently than it sounds. So,
okay.
I'll say what it is, and I will read the definition for you too, or I'll spell it for you. So it's CESTUI, and then there's a space, and then QUE. And then a space, and then trust. I trust everyone can spell trust. So,
okay. Yeah.
So, and the definition for this is he who has a right to a beneficial interest in and out of an estate, the legal title to which is vested in another. The person who possesses the equitable right to property and receives the rents, issues, and profits thereof, the legal estate of which is vested in a trustee. So it's my opinion that this was, you know, this is the purpose of having government set up, was so that they would have things like hospitals and roads and all that sort of thing. You know, it would be our property. The government would hold legal title to it, but they would be there as a trustee in order to take care of it for us. And I think that's initially what government was set up to do. And I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they fulfilled that function. You know, we're looking out after us, other than the just us system, you know.
Yeah.
That seems to be going on. I think we've got one other caller here. Let me see. I think we've got Alan online too. Let's see if we can pick up Alan. Are you with us?
Yeah.
Oh, welcome to the show, Alan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Do you have a question?
Oh, I just want to make some comments. I met you at the conferences, I don't know, years ago, Bay Area UFO and Conspiracy Con a few times, and I think you International UFO Congress or something. And I know you don't do those anymore, but I just I get your SETI emails, and I have a website. It's NAHLS.net. It's North American Historical Law Society. My nonprofit, and you guys are talking about mortgages, and I just want to put out some information for anybody out there who's you know, got that problem. This is very little known, but I've been researching this for a long time, and we're doing all kinds of things trying to save some houses. One of them is the MERS deed of trust has a couple of things in there that they're routinely violating, and this is not yet been heard by a court. This is an issue of first impression, and we're going to be taken to a court of appeal soon. What it is look at Article 24 in your MERS deeds of trust. It gives only, and the law says in the court rulings that in these mortgages, when they sell your houses, they're strictly bound to the language in the deed of trust, the express language, and there's no wiggle room. And Article 24 in all the MERS is, and this is something like, I don't know, 60% of the stuff out there where they're stealing houses or selling houses, about 67% or something is MERS deeds of trust. And we haven't found one that doesn't have this. It expressly reserves the right for the substitution of the trustee only to the lender, not MERS. And it says it's to the exclusion of all other provisions. It governs to the exclusion of all other provisions, which basically screws the lid down tight. It's airtight and you can't escape. And if you go check your documents, you'll find out that right before they sell your house, when they foreclose on you, MERS issues a substitution of trustee, and then they record it, and then that's the guy who sells your house at the auction. Well, that's void. If you look at the Article 24 and research the trust laws and powers of sale laws, but check out my website, nahls.net, and you can contact me. My email's on there. If anybody has any questions about any of this stuff, we have tons of research, and I give it for free. I will email you tons of files on all this complete research. Also, there's the issue of rescission for fraud in the factum, fraud in the inducement, promissory fraud. If you rescind your mortgages prior to the sale, when they start the foreclosure procedure, there is no, it's properly served and you had cause to rescind it, there is no sale, and you can set aside later, and we have all the court rulings on this. But I just wanted to say, James, I'm, you know, really in tune with your stuff you're sending out in the city. I get them every day, and I'm really liking what you're doing over the years. And I consider you my brother, man, and keep it up. I know the eternal creator, the source of everything is with you guys up there, and what you're doing is sanctified, and you guys are protected, and I don't believe they're going to be able to move you off that property. But if you ever need any research for free, just send me an email, James. I got a quarter of a million files on my computer. It's double encrypted, and they can't get to it, and I can send you anything that you need for law research or anything else.
Yeah, so the way it was NAHLS.net?
Yeah. It stands for North American Historical Law Society. It's my Nevada nonprofit corporation, and it's just educational, charitable thing.
Great.
But,
and what's your name?
Check that out. I don't do a lot of work on that website. A guy's doing it for me, and I have different talks I've given. You can click on and listen to them on the radio. And but I would like to, you know, get in touch with you sometime, and when I can. We're involved in a bunch of lawsuits, and I'm going to be doing some shows later. And when we get this to a court of appeal, and some of this stuff's going to be coming out, and hopefully we're going to just send it all over. And some people are going to be able to get their homes back, too, because there's millions of people who have lost them on this fraud.
Yeah, find the fraud. That's what it comes down to. Excellent.
But contact me through my email, Alan at NAHLS, .net, and the website, too. And I give free research for free to everybody. Anybody who has problems with losing your houses on mortgage foreclosures, unlawful detainers, I'll send you everything, man, for free on your email, just by email attachment.
Hey, well,
so
that's awesome of you putting in all that time and energy. And I know saving somebody's home, you know, is right next to saving their lives, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's nothing left to live for when they lose their home and their job and everything else. So, you know, I can't thank you enough for doing your work out there and, you know, helping people get their homes back, and Rory too, for getting people out of jail, you know. And it seems like freedom in a home should be basic, you know.
It is. It's a human
right. Once was,
no one can lawfully really take from you.
Yes. You know, food, freedom, and a home. I mean, what's wrong with that? We should have at least those three, you know.
Yep.
It's pretty crazy. Thanks a lot for calling in, Alan, and I'm sure we'll be in touch with you, as well as probably other people that are having experiences.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Keep up the good work, brother. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. great caller.
Yeah, that was a great call.
Yeah, we've got Spencer hanging on here. You know, we've got, this is a 2-hour show. It was a 1-hour show, and we've bumped it up to 2 hours. I don't know how much longer you want to stay on, but, we've got Spencer on the line, and he's got a few questions for you, but it's up to you on how long you want to stay with us.
I put my night aside for the show, so whatever, okay. Whatever you have, I can be here for.
So Spencer, are you with us?
I'm right here, James.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Good to be on.
So help me out here. I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, and maybe you can talk to Rory and give him a little background on who you are and what you've been up to. And Spencer's been helping us out here quite a bit on some of the challenges that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just leave it at that and turn it over to Spencer for a minute.
Yeah, Rory, I've seen your interview on with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I live pretty close to James, and mostly what I do is the commercial stuff. I kind of started small with, chipping away at helping people's debt, small mm-hmm. stuff, you know, the easiest debt to erase or to address is, the unsecured stuff, the old loans, something that's been transferred to a third party debt collector, because there are so many loopholes in it that it just doesn't stand up. And I kind of practiced my way through a lot of that stuff. And that's kind of most of my experience in this kind of stuff, aside from maybe unregistering some property, specifically my car.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one question I had for you too, is, what steps did you go through to unregister your car?
What I actually did was, I bought, for what I'm doing, I bought a car off of somebody used.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have the bill of sale, from the person I bought it from, and I have never registered it. So it's mine.
Oh yeah.
I just didn't deregister it because there's no need to deregister something I've never registered. So
sure. Yeah.
That's how I went about it. I imagine, you know, deregistering would be a simple matter of just sending notice that you're doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
and that's exactly what I did. And I was wondering if there wasn't just a little bit of a fringe in, as far as an excuse on your car, as far as how they would see it being registered. I inherited mine.
Hmm.
And when I transferred it, over to my name, what I did was there was paperwork that the state wanted. And so I wrote all over it. I do not consent to, registration.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was kind of interesting because I've been pulled over, and, when the management of police had showed up, they just cut me loose after they ran my plate. I just kept the license plate on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've loaned it out, to other people. And, one person got a ticket in it. And, when they got to court, they dropped everything.
Yeah. See, that doesn't surprise me because they don't have your registration, right? So
mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
You're not under their rules, under their laws. You've done nothing to put yourself there. There's no contract. So how can they prove anything? And that's how I view it. You know, I explained everything to the police officer that I talked to. Like, I heard the sirens go off near my house, and I went and I talked to him for a good, it must have been 40 minutes, and I got him to record everything, and I explained what I'm doing and explained my lawful position. And I've had them behind me 3 times now. I don't see how they could not see my plate. My plate is not a fancy metal plate. It's a plastic license plate cover where I took gold, gold lettering that you would put on your mailbox, and I wrote "Common Law Forever Free" on it. So,
wow, yeah.
I don't see how they're not going to see that. You know, it's everyone else in the world sees it. I pull into a parking lot anywhere, and people are staring at my car. And when I get out, they're asking me questions, or even if they're not asking questions, I'll comment just so they know.
Right.
Because often they'll look at me like I'm crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Freedom is beyond most people's ability to grasp.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's coming around though.
It is definitely, you know, we're in the time of great change, I like to call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always had that. I've had that same attitude since I was born too. I was the one that always asked why. And then if they didn't have a good reason, I did my own thing.
Right.
And just by nature, you know, if they have a good reason, you know, if there's a good reason for something, then great. But I like that program. You know, if you haven't harmed anybody and you're doing nothing but good work on the planet, and there's no reason why they should continue to, you know, stick it to you and, you know, try to force you to jump through all their hoops and all their programs.
Yeah, no. And ultimately, I don't think they do really force you. I think you just sign up for it. I think you make a contract. And all my research shows that it's done through your Social Security social insurance number. That's the contract right there, is that you sign up to work for their corporation, and they give you an employee number. And once you get your employee number, and they can tie you to it through things like your driver's license, where you have to bring your employee number with you, and your, you know, all the various other things that they make you sign up for and register for, and, you know, the health care, bring your employee number if you want your health care and stuff like that. That's,
you know, I just opened an account with a credit union, and they kind of demanded that I give them a social security number. Mm-hmm. And I did, because I was in a hurry and I needed to get some things done. But do you lawfully have to give them a social security number?
No,
not at all.
No, not at all.
Well, they could also say, well, we're not going to give you an account here. We're not going to allow you to be one of our members.
They can say that they don't want you to be a member if they don't want you to be a member. That's up to them, right? Yeah. So,
you know, if they're of the
opinion that you have to have that number in order to be one of their members, I would just not want to be with them. I personally try not to use any bank at all. I don't keep my money in a bank. I buy silver or gold and keep it in an undisclosed location.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm of that same nature, unfortunately, because of the work that I do. And, you know, with book sales and all the other things that I'm involved with, you know, I still have to use banks, unfortunately. It'd be nice to get, we are trying to get away from that, but, it's just because we are internationally known, and the work that we're doing is, you know, shipping things internationally and everything else, we still have to, play in part of the system.
They very much set it up that way so that it was like that. Yeah, I still actually have a bank account, but because I don't like what banks are doing, I took my student card because they have a free banking thing for students. So I pay nothing to the bank, and then I keep no money in it, really, like a penny, so that the account stays open. And then if I have to do anything through the bank, I can't.
The Social Security number, by... I guess that's a process, an affidavit process, or whatever, if you wanted to break that contract.
Again, as you know, it's not a lifelong contract, so a simple notice is really all you need. Is just send them notice that, you know, you no longer wish to do business with them, and it's over. You're done. Because you can't be forced. That's actually what some of my videos are about, is I call up the place where you get ours from and ask them questions about if you're required by law to get one. And I prove that you're in fact not required by law. And they make all sorts of claims. You know, at first they lied to me and told me I am. And when I asked for the law, then they couldn't come up with it and came to the agreement that, you know, you didn't have to. And then they started telling me that employers would be punished. And I asked them what law that was. And then they lied to me about that. And then I was able to prove that they were lying, and I got, you know, them to apologize to me. And then they've, you know, sent me off on another wild goose chase. And no matter where I look, I can't find anything that is an actual law that states that an employer will be punished for hiring somebody without a social insurance number.
Yeah. How about an illegal alien? Is that, would that go under the same premise?
Well, if they're acting within their sovereign capacity, then they're not an illegal alien.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, if you admit to being an illegal alien, then suddenly you are an illegal alien. You don't admit to it, you're not. So
you have to counsel them, say, okay, you can work for me, but you're a sovereign being.
Yeah, and again, you know, the system's all set up to make this very difficult because employers think that you have to have these things, right? So I haven't personally gotten rid of mine yet because, as far as I'm concerned, it was never disclosed to me when I signed up for that number that it was making me an employee of the Government of Canada. And if so, it was done in fraud, and I can easily prove this in you know, any court.
Great. Yeah, that's a good one to know. Spencer, do you have any other questions, or feel free to chime in?
No, there's, you know, a lot of times you guys keep bringing up the same point, which can be defined down to a lot of the frontline bureaucrats that we deal with are so ignorant to how things are done. I'm convinced that a lot of the lying that these guys will tell you, they don't know. They just truly believe in part that everybody has to follow these rules, kind of like children at a school.
Yeah, definitely.
And that folks that don't toe that line don't survive in a bureaucratic environment for their career. And so those cultures are maintained. Self-maintained.
Yeah, yeah. And the slaves maintain it for the slave masters by attacking each other.
Mm-hmm. And so, if you know what to offer a bank or to tell, instead of asking for information on how to open up an account, I don't have the information right here in front of me, but there are ways to open up an account, and the people that have done it suggest. They tell them, look, I'm this status in your computer system. Go look that up. And you direct them as to what status it is rather than asking them if they can find it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's some of the ways to go about this. And therein kind of lies some of the research is you gotta know what to tell them. But rather than ask for powerful information from the most ignorant folks at the front line.
Yeah, one of the things, sorry, getting back, because that reminded me, this initially started with the question about if it's required to have a social insurance number. I know for a fact that even within statute law, there is no requirement, and that you're actually, you know, a bank or a credit union can't force you to give them that number in order to open an account.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I wanted to get that in there because I think I went off without addressing that.
Yeah,
so.
But then again, they can. I was wondering, you know, they can refuse. They can refuse you, Ben, but because not giving it to them.
Sure, it's their business, so they can decide whether or not they want you. I imagine you could probably sue them if it was based on the social insurance number, because they are subject or feel like they are subject to government laws. So they have to follow them, right? And that's one of the things they're not allowed to ask you for. So I guess you could probably force your way through the door, or, you know, as has been suggested, maybe there's another way to address them that maybe would make it easier.
Well, Spencer had a really good topic there, and that, you know, when you're dealing with these people and you lay out a case and you have the unrebutted affidavits and all this stuff, and you just got them beat. You got them beat. There's no way out of it. And then they rule against you. I've seen, they're too ignorant to know that they were beat. They don't even know what just happened. But they're going to just they're going to take the normal program of, hey, you know, this is, I'm the judge here. You're not playing ball by our rules. So end of story, you know, pay the fine.
Yeah. And I think that ultimately that's because people haven't set up their jurisdiction properly. I think there are ignorant magistrates, and they're often the ones that are dealing with traffic court and minor civil issues as opposed to Supreme Court. But I know that when you get up into Supreme Court, especially, which you can take any case to Supreme Court. Those men know what's going on. They understand sovereignty, and they get the common law, and they know what a court of record is. And I know there are people out there, like Bill Thornton, who have had incredible success with these men who really, even though they're part of the Bar Association, really truly understand what it is to be sovereign and how important it is to maintain that position and not allow it to be gotten rid of.
Yeah, I agree. It just seems like you have to be willing to take it to the top, you know, if you're going to take this path. And
yeah, and the big thing too is really setting up your jurisdiction ahead of time and stuff. You know, if you don't understand what a court of record is, and if you haven't explained it in your paperwork right from the beginning with whoever you're dealing with, then it's going to be more difficult. You can still establish it, you know, obviously, but you know, you have to, the main thing is when you walk into that courtroom, you really need to prove ahead of time that you know what you're doing. Because if you don't, the man on the bench is going to do what he always does, which is, you know, take over as babysitter and be the tribunal. Because, you know, you never let him know ahead of time you were showing up as tribunal. Yeah. And he's used to that position. And there's paperwork involved. Like you can file a counterclaim against the man on the bench if he has been informed of all these things ahead of time, and he does try to proceed with his court, even though you've established your jurisdiction ahead of time, and you object to everything he says as soon as he starts. Mm-hmm. You know, if you come in there and you say, "How is my magistrate today in the court of record?" and he goes, this is summary convictions, right? You just say, objection, right away. You don't allow him to set up his jurisdiction, because when he says it's summary convictions, he's trying to tell you it's not your court, it's my court. And so you really have to be aware of all these little things that they do, because he wants to keep his power and he doesn't want to give it up. And so if you don't know what he's doing, then you're going to not know what to say when he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And he'll establish his jurisdiction, and then whatever he says goes, and it doesn't matter how many unrebutted affidavits you have in his court. It's his rules, it's his law, and he'll decide what he wishes.
So basically, when you walk in, you say, "How is my magistrate today?" And then he'll do, well, what's he going to do again? He was going to say, "This is summary."
Well, I say, "How is my magistrate today in the court of record?" Because the court of record proceeds according to the course of common law. So he'll say something to, you know, if he doesn't want it to be my court, then he'll say something like, "This is summary convictions," or he'll say, "Of course it's a court of record. We record everything here," you know, which a court of record has nothing to do with "we record everything here." It's mm-hmm. quite clearly defined as a court that generally possesses a seal and has a tribunal who is independent of a magistrate. So by addressing the man on the bench as the magistrate and defining it as a court of record, you define that you are the tribunal and you're proceeding according to the course of a common law. And any magistrate worth his salt will know exactly what you're saying when you say that and will try and challenge it if he doesn't like it.
Yeah, this is good in the U.S. as well. It's the same wording.
Yeah, definitely. A court of record is all throughout the European, you know, English speaking nations. It's what it is.
Spencer, have you got anything, any other questions on that or?
No, I would add though that a court of record has the power to fine or imprison.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting because statutory courts don't have that unless you grant them jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So when they say "all rise" and you stand up, that's an offer of jurisdiction. And when you rise, you accept it. And there's many ways that they acquire jurisdiction.
Yep. Oh yeah. There's all sorts of ways they're trying to do that. Yeah. And that's one of the things that's what's so important is setting up your jurisdiction so that you let them know you have the power to fine and imprison. That's why I say when I'm dealing with a peace officer, and I give him the notice and let him know everything that's going on, that as he, you know, starts creating contracts and fraud, I will be issuing fines and letting him know that he can be imprisoned for what he's doing.
Right, and you already have that authority, and statutory courts have to gain it.
Yes, yeah, I have it straight up. Anything to do with me as sovereign, then I have the authority to fine or imprison anyone who imposes upon my will.
Yeah,
with my belongings and my person.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's interesting is that, I mean, I just caught myself in this when you're saying, you know, have the ability to fine or imprison. Right away I went, oh crap, they can fine me and throw me in jail. And just because I can see the programming that I have to break is that, wait a second, I have the ability to fine and imprison
them. That's the whole thing is with the magistrate who tries to challenge your jurisdiction. If he doesn't gain jurisdiction, then you can file a counterclaim against him and you can fine him for his, you know, his belligerence in your court.
And contempt.
And contempt, yeah, his contempt, that's the proper term to use, his contempt in your court.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that will, that's probably the heaviest hammer in court.
Yep.
It is,
and it'll be upheld by the top judges in the land, because they actually do it to each other when they see people out of hand.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I know when there was a thing with child support, which was crazy. It's a long story, but they just imputed a number and said I was making something like $5,000 or $7,000 a month and gave me a job description as a contract, even though I didn't have a contractor's license and was not doing any contracting work. And then, so I took it to court and this was before I knew all this stuff. And I gave my bank records and I said, this is how much money I make, which was more like $700 a month at the time. And I said, you know, here's my records, here's this and everything else. And entered them, you know, on the record. And so the judge looked at it and he says, and you know, the DA or whatever started saying, you know, this guy, and he's just making up all these stories, you know, with no evidence. And the judge actually asked him, he said, well, wait a second, do you have any evidence whatsoever that this guy is making all of this money that you've imputed to him? And he says, no.
Yeah.
And so the judge goes, he looks it over and he goes, well, you know, since they did the proper paperwork, to create these liens, told me I had to pay him. And then I asked him, well, Your Honor, isn't it against the law in the state of Washington to collect a lien based on fraudulent information? And he told me, he said, one more word and you're in contempt of court.
Yeah.
And that was it.
His court, right? And so one of the things that they do in court is they prefer form over substance. Mm-hmm. And in a common law court, it's substance over form. So if you have both form and substance when you step in there, which is why I say, you know, I've filled out my notices properly. I've recorded everything. If I step in there with form and I have substance, there's no way they'll deny it. They really, you know, they'd be insane to do it because it shows that I know what I'm doing and it shows them ahead of time that they're just going to find themselves in trouble if they do what they did to you, right? Which is to just overrule you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so when people really figure this out and, you know, study the definitions and look into it, that's why I did my definitions videos, is it's so important to really get what these definitions are because they're used against you if you don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Now, for people to see those videos, what's the easiest way for them to, you know, connect and get more information on the work that you're doing?
Well, my YouTube channel is called I Practice What I Preach. It's all done with proper grammar without any spaces. Well, actually, it's not proper grammar, pardon me. It's all capital letters at each word to differentiate them. But if you want to know the definitions videos, you know, go into YouTube and type in definitions every sovereign should know, and my videos will pop up, because as far as I know, I'm the only one who's done it. And so I go through all these definitions. I have a court of record. I have a magistrate. I have a tribunal. I have court. I have common law in there. The SESTK trust, the beneficiary, trustee. So I cover quite a few things that are important.
Yeah, it looks like I've got my homework cut out on that one.
Yeah, it takes time. It really does. I've spent so much time. I literally had a point where I was spending 12 hours a day just reading through the different definitions. You know, some of them were totally irrelevant, but, you know, that's how I gained my knowledge, was just, you know, with my nose in the dictionary and looking at what they had set up in those law dictionaries and how they were doing things, and took my experience from court in the past and what I'd seen in court and, you know, what other people are doing, and put it all together. And that's when I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, now that I know what I know, I'm going to slap my own plates on my vehicle and I'm going to go out there and let's see if they want to break the law, because I know what it is now.
Right.
Yeah, that's something I think everybody should be doing, you know, keeping busy. They keep the court so busy they won't know what to do.
No.
So just it seems like, you know, we talked a little bit about this Occupy Wall Street and, you know, this Nassar movement too. I've heard so much about that, but I keep waiting for the teeth, you know, to come into that, and they have all these benefits, I guess, that people are going to be getting. And I mean, I heard about that thing since the 70s. It'd be great to see it happen, but I'm not holding my breath. But it does seem like this Occupy Wall Street, and where they're just saying, okay, we want to end the corruption, the injustice, you know, in the system and everything else. Where do you think this might go as far as the legal system?
This is where I hope that things will get interesting, where people who know what I know are going to start getting involved, because the people at Occupy Wall Street are, you know, for the most part, they all have little bits of information here and there about the corruption, and their focus is, they're really just know something's wrong as opposed to knowing really what it is. And so this is where I'm hoping, you know, people like myself will have a chance to step up and start holding people accountable for what they're doing. I know there are people out there who have done it much more than myself. I'm trying to set an example, you know, for one aspect of it. The driving is mainly what I'm focusing on, you know, because really no man can be liable for another man. So why on earth would I have to buy insurance? Why would I be forced into insurance? That doesn't make any sense, because I'm liable. Even if I have insurance, I'm still liable if I cause an accident. So, yeah. You know, so with the Occupy Wall Street and where they're going, you know, I just see them moving forward, without the knowledge, but there's going to be people in there who have it. You know, there's people out there who know what it is to be sovereign, and they're going to start teaching it to other people there. I know we had an Occupy movement here in Vancouver. We had over 2,000 people showed up today.
Wow.
In downtown Vancouver. So it's quite a thing. Wow. If you've looked on the internet, it worldwide, it's been a huge day today for that. So I'm excited by it, because, you know, just seeing people wake up to the fact that things are just not right is amazing.
80 countries are involved in this right now. What I found interesting is that, or what would be interesting, if you put Occupy Wall Street, know the rules, or know the law, or something like that. I'll bet you that would just go viral on YouTube or whatever else, and put it out there so that people will know the law, know how they can behave and how they can hold the police accountable for any, you know, injustices that are going on.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think that would just go viral. And when people know and document it and get the guy's badge number, and then next thing you know, the guy finds himself in court, you know, it might be a whole different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But again, you know, it takes time to learn it. So,
Yeah.
It definitely wouldn't be something that somebody would pick up from watching one or two videos, you know. And that's something I make quite clear in my videos, is that, you know, watching my videos isn't going to tell you everything you know. And I always suggest that people go to 1215.org and look at Bill Thornton's work, because he's been working on it much, much longer than I have. Mm-hmm. And he's had tons of success, holding his own court and holding court for other people as well, showing up as special master to take care of it. So.
Interesting. And there's no substitute for experience.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. My experience is very limited. It's knowledge I've gleaned, and, it has yet to be practiced. I'm attempting to do it right now because I've spent a lot of time studying it. And all my studying has led me to, you know, people like Bill Thornton who have had enormous amounts of success. And so seeing that I was on the right track and gaining some knowledge from people like him, has left me with so much confidence. And then, you know, my conversation with that peace officer that I had, also left me with so much confidence, because I had an answer for everything he said. Mm-hmm. And I put him, like, by the end of the conversation, I was like, you know, you're going to be breaking the law. And he said, I hope you're right. And I said, I know I'm right. And I said, you know, that was the end of the conversation. So, you know, it just gave me huge confidence going through that. And him just, he had nothing he could say. He tried using the Bible against me. He tried using the Constitution against me. And I very clearly defined how our Canadian Constitution states that the only people under the authority of anyone in Canada are the government, the legislature, and Parliament. So, you know, I'm none of those. How do you have power over me? Prove it.
Yeah. And I guess that goes the same for our Constitution.
Yours is very simple. It's based on we the people. Mm-hmm. And if you identify yourself as one of the people, not a citizen, that's one tragic mistake so many people make, is they call themselves, well, I'm a citizen of the United States of America. A citizen is someone who is subject to government and has duties. That's the definition of citizen. So if you want to consider yourself subject to the government and have duties, then, you know, you can go ahead. But I would never claim to be a citizen. And cops try to trap you with that. Because he tried that on me too. Aren't you a citizen? I'm like, no. Mm-hmm. I'm a citizen. I was born in Calgary, on the land known as Canada, but I'm not a citizen because I'm not subject to government and I don't have duties.
So, yeah. Let's say you go into court and how would you identify yourself? You know, you walk into court and they say, for example, Mr. Gilliland, you know?
They're going to ask, you know, is Rory Daniel Hawes here? And I would walk up and I would say, I'm Rory Daniel, House of Hawes. How is my magistrate today in the court of record? And if he wants to challenge that and he says, no, I'm looking for Rory Daniel Hawes, I'll be like, didn't you just hear me? I'm here on that matter. What seems to be the problem?
You know, I like I'm here on that matter a lot better. It depends on if you're the plaintiff or the defendant. If you're a plaintiff, you kind of can't go wrong.
Yeah, that's why you file the counterclaim right away. So if a peace officer does anything, or anyone like the city tries to get you with a ticket or a fine, you immediately file a counterclaim against them for harm.
But if you're a straight defendant, you can get in trouble real quick.
It's the inferior
position. By giving any name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're in an inferior position. And if you're just showing up like that, you obviously are doing something wrong. You should never show up as defendant ever.
Yeah. But if you find yourself in that position, I'm here on that matter. And then the name game can be a little tricky. The reason they're asking for a name is because it is explicit agreement that you want to contract, because the first element of a contract is the name of the party.
Is the name. Yeah.
Right. And so as the interaction unfolds, therein lies the elements of the contract. And so I would not say a name. I'd say I'm here on that matter. Then I would ask for their name. May I have your name, please?
Yeah, get them in on it too.
Mm-hmm. Once they don't give it to you, now how are you obliged to give it to them?
Mm-hmm.
And that should kind of settle the name game down.
Yeah, that's a bit more blunt way of doing it. You know, I word what I say very carefully. That's why, you know, I'm Rory Daniel, House of Hawes. This is the, you know, House of Hawes when using the, you know, what they call the last name is the way of defining yourself as sovereign. And,
sure.
You know, I established my court right away. And of course, before I would ever be there, I would be plaintiff. I never suggest to anyone, and I should have mentioned this earlier, don't show up as a defendant ever. Don't ever do that. You should be filing a counterclaim right away.
Yeah, or super plaintiff even.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the, like you said, it's one of their games to establish jurisdiction. You know, they're asking if you're the name, right? So.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know what, James, are you catching this term that he's using, the house of? I was spending a lot of time not understanding how this name business was important. And one of the things I stumbled across was looking up some of the British royalty on the internet, and none of any British royalty ever has a last name. They have an endless succession of given names, and then they are of the house of. They do not have a last name.
Yeah, I don't have a last name.
Yeah, well, there may be a last name. It's not referring to you. It's a legal fiction that's completely separate.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have a last name. I have a given name, Rory Daniel, and I love to define it for people too, because it solidifies my sovereignty. My name, when you look it up, Rory means the Red King, and Daniel means God is my witness.
Oh, wow.
I thank my parents very much for that name, because when I looked up the definition, I was like, oh my God, wow. That's great. This kind of explains why I act the way I do and why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, well, that would make sense.
Further to that thought, then, is no one has a last name. It's just that they've been so restricted on knowledge that's the only terminology that they're familiar with.
Yeah, I don't have a first name either. I have given names.
Right.
Given to me by my parents and my creator, so.
That's
another thing. They'll ask you your first name, and I'll say I don't have a first name. They'll be like, you don't have a name? I have a given name. Don't have a first name.
I've got another question. So when you go into the court, and a lot of courts, you have to sign in before they even let you through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And signing your name on that registry, did you just contract with them when?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what you would want to do with, in that case is, you know, write down Rory Daniel, House of Hawes, all rights reserved.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I've seen sign-in before. I don't know how I would handle that. I might just write, I'm here on that matter.
Yeah.
Because whoever refuses a tender holds the charge. So I would say, I'm tendering an offer of performance. Are you refusing?
Yeah, there's many ways to go about, you know, not giving them jurisdiction. So... all rights reserved for me is a very basic way.
So even after they try to entrap you with your name, you just have to keep saying all rights reserved, or...
yeah, or I waive none.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, there's so many ways. I guess just, you know, give yourself a title, House, you know, James Allen Gilliland, House Gilliland, and here on that matter? How is my magistrate day?
it's magistrate.
Magistrate. And then, after that, they'd probably just blow the cork, you know?
they'll probably attack. Again, you know, you really have to have the knowledge, right? So.
Yeah, they'll say, what is your name? What, you know, what, they'll probably ask me again, what is your name?
Yeah. And you have to stand in your sovereign capacity and look at him like he's, you know, look at him and just say, what was not clear about who I am? I told you who I was. I'm here on that matter. What seems to be your problem? Why are you asking this question? You know, put them on the spot. Make them try and explain it. If he keeps asking like a retard, then, you know, you're just, why are you doing this? I explained who I am.
Yeah.
Well, and you
yeah.
can end that series as well when you speak parenthetically. You can say, I've brought this up twice already. This is the third and last time. And then you're not obliged to continue an endless circle.
Yeah.
And so once you hit three times, you could say, we've passed the opportunity to talk about that.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Boy, just remember all this when you're under the gun is a different story.
It's a real different story. It is a real different story.
Well, yeah, under threat of death, you know, then, you know, that's when they'll steal my car, right? When someone pulls out the taser and starts threatening me, then, yeah, they're going to be able to steal my car and, you know, they can go ahead and do it and I'll have their name and I'll know who they are and I'll file a lawsuit. Armed robbery. That's a big one. You're not going to be a police officer after I'm done with you.
Right.
Did you like your job?
One of the main statutes.
You just broke them.
Say, well, it's too bad you're not going to have a Christmas this year. If you want to continue on this path, you know. What do you think about the contract one where they say, you know, okay, you know, they ask for your license and registration. You say, I don't have one. And then they say, okay, get out of the car. And you say, okay, well, that's going to cost you $50,000 for me to get out of this car.
Oh, yeah, sure. You could totally do that. Because they're giving you an order, right? Any order you can give a bill for. It's always nice to have, like, receipts with you, right? So you can write out bills for them. Or not receipts. Yeah. You know, like have a little book to write out a bill. Sorry, not receipts.
But. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then they say, okay, get in the police car. Well, that's another 100,000.
Yeah, you could do that. One of the things though that I try and express to people is if you're going to be doing this, I don't feel asking for enormous amounts for minor things is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he's demanding that I get out of the car, then, you know, set a price, but, you know, make it believable so you're not going into court asking for $1 million because that's going to be pretty difficult if it comes to a jury situation to convince a jury that it was, you know, you're owed $1 million for being told to get, you know, for agreeing to a contract to get out of your car. So,
mm-hmm.
But again, I prefer fines. I prefer just to not agree. I don't want a contract with you, officer. I want nothing to do with getting out of the car right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get out.
Yeah, it seems like there's so many different ways of handling this. There's, you know, I think if everybody stood up for themselves, I mean, the courts would be so full, they would just have to start dismissing people. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd just be overloaded.
Oh, they would for sure.
Yeah,
hopefully run out of money. You know, like using their taxpayer.
That's one of the things you want to use against them too when you actually do end up in court. That's one of the wonders of filing a counterclaim is you can drag them through the mud and it's going to cost them lawyers. And if you know what you're doing, then you're just there in your sovereign capacity and all it costs you is time. But them, they're paying some lawyer $1,000 an hour, $1,500 an hour to be there.
Well, and another expense that they're incurring is that they're educating the bureaucrats to what's going on, and that's very expensive for them.
Yeah, they like to get rid of it. They really don't want us there teaching people. Because I'm more than willing to explain it to anyone. I'll talk with people after court in the peanut gallery and explain everything that's gone on.
Yeah.
They really don't want me in their courtroom. Like, I'm not surprised I haven't ended up there yet. And I won't be surprised if it all goes away before I ever get there.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot with Dean Clifford and some of his information and stories are just amazing. You know, mm-hmm. how he's just, you know, he seems to just take the offense right up front, you know.
He's very blunt. I don't suggest going about it the way Dean Clifford does, because I think you can get in a lot of trouble that way. You know, that's why I word my things the way I do. It's a polite way. You know, I'll object to what the judge says. I'm not going to get in his face and be belligerent, because I find that when you act very peaceful, and state your case in a calm way, that, if they do something like arrest you or the sheriffs come, it's going to be something that is going to stand out in court. Everyone's going to see it as them doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I have a few objections with Dean Clifford's work too, with his focus on the legal person. I find that the focus on the legal person is something that people do way too much of with this sovereignty thing, and claiming to be administrator of legal person is, you know, administration of a trust is generally something that a trustee takes care of. That's why you have them. So I don't do any of that sort of claiming to be administrator. I am beneficiary. You know, they are trustees, but I don't make myself director or administrator of anything. I'm in charge of me, and you know, that's just a given. It doesn't need to be addressed in claiming the legal person.
So you go in as the House of Hoth and the beneficiary?
Yeah, the beneficiary part is a side note that I'm working on. The big thing is sovereignty. Honestly, the trust issue is something I'm looking into to see if I still have these things like healthcare that were supposed to be set up through my government for me. They're not necessary. They're not something I have to have. For me, it's sovereignty is the big focus. And this SDK trust and the beneficiary is something I'm still trying to prove. And trustee, like that relationship with the government is something I'm trying to prove. Sovereignty, I know for a fact. I know who I am. I know where I stand according to law. And that gives me an enormous amount of protection.
And so in your journeys, what would you say, let's say somebody's just beginning, you know, to get into this, where would they go? And if you have any, like your website or any other websites that you could give people to really start learning about their sovereignty and, you know, the rule of law and how to deal with, some of the tyranny that's going on here on the planet. What do you think the best approach would be for people?
My YouTube videos are great for, I put them out there to get people started. So I always suggest that. So I practice what I preach, and I have about 10 videos there. If you like what you see in those videos and you find that it kind of rings true with how you feel, as a man, then I suggest going to 1215.org. I don't have a website for myself because Bill Thornton has done so much incredible work. It seems it would just be a waste of time for me to basically put up everything he already has there. So I suggest that people go to 1215.org and check out Bill Thornton's work.
Mm-hmm. And same with you, Spencer. Have you got some places we could send people to, or?
Creditors and Commerce is great.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
There's three different folks there that pitch in on their specialty, whether it's money and commerce or contracting or how it rolls into law and government. And so I love Bill Thornton and 1215.org, but to add just another dimension to it, I'd say Creditors in Commerce.
Yeah, that they definitely cover a lot of the financial issues that a lot of people are having now, which is great. For me, like, that's not a big issue. I focus very much on the sovereignty part and being able to prove, you know, that these people have no authority over me and will not jail me for anything I do unless it's harm. And so that's my focus. But if people are having, you know, problems with their credit and with commerce, then that's definitely the place to go as creditors and commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's so many, you can make this a full-time job. I can't thank you guys enough for making it your full-time job and you know, the time and energy you've spent to learn this and get this out to people to let them know they do have a shot at it. But, you know, it is a long journey to get proficient at this. And I guess you have to learn a few lessons along the way.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's all a matter of your will, right? What you want to be involved in and what you want to learn. So if you want to be a part of their system, there's a way to be a part of their system. I find their system's way more difficult than this because there's so many rules, like millions of them. I can't even count. And, you know, I don't see how you'll ever learn them. Or you can take some time and, you know, you don't have to do what I did, which is spend 12 hours a day, but, you know, spend a bit of time every day looking at the law dictionary, spend a bit of time every day, you know, listening to some of the audio that Bill Thornton put out, or, you know, go over one of my videos a couple of times and listen to the definitions and pick them apart, right?
Great. And we've got just maybe a minute left. We're unfortunately running out of time, but I can't thank you both enough for contributing to this. And I really do maybe put a bug in your ear, maybe, you know, give a little shout out to the Occupy Wall Street people and maybe find somebody that could kind of train them on how to behave. Okay, how do you deal with this situation and what are your rights and what are your remedies? I think that would be awesome because, you know, they are doing a great service out there and it would just be nice to educate them and arm them, you know, with a way of continuing to get their message out peacefully, but at the same time, you know, make sure that they have their rights and their sovereignty preserved.
Yeah, that's a great idea, right? James. Because I have them on my Facebook as a friend, so maybe I should do something like that. Yeah, and just kind of put together something similar to my definitions videos so that they have an idea. The bug's in my ear, James. Thanks.
All right. Great. Hey, well, again, I can't thank you both enough for coming on the show. We're out of time. If you've got anything you want to get out or any major updates or anything, just give me a shout and we'll bring you back on the air.
Okay. Thank you very much for the interview. I had a great time.
Hey, thanks for the education. And thank
no
you,
problem.
Too, Steve.
You're welcome.
All right, this is James Dillon with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening. And stand tall in your sovereignty. You're going to be tested in the days to come. Have a great evening.